जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोश्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ। ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इस् इन्फिनिट् एण्ड् दिस् यूनिवर्स् इस् आल्सो इन्फिनिट्। दिस् इन्फिनिट् यूनिवर्स् हेज् कम् औट् आफ् दट् infinite Brahman. Even then, that infinite Brahman remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. We have almost come to the end of the first chapter. We are in the sixth section of the first chapter of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And herein, in this sixth section, the Upanishad is really condensing, summarizing, giving the very essence of the entire Brihadaranyaka Upanishad by reducing the whole world into three experienceable components: the names, the forms, and the action. Nama, Rupa, and Karma. As we discussed earlier, nama, rupa and karma. Nama means sound, shabda brahma. Rupa means the material from which every conceivable form can come out. And wherever there is nama and rupa, there would be a prayojana, a utility, an action, whether it is by others or by oneself. So we have to take both into consideration. For example, when I see a glass and I feel like drinking water, then I use that glass for this action called filling it up with water and drinking it. Of course, the glass never feels the thirst. But it has a definite purpose, actionable purpose. And as we discussed, this section, sixth section, is also called Ukta Brahmana. Brahmana means section, not a person belonging to a particular caste. Here it means a section. Sanskrit words can have many different meanings for the same word. For example, Atma can mean the body, Atma can mean the mind, Atma can mean the egotism, Atma can mean the self or Brahman. So, the very essence can also be called Atma. Sweetness is the Atma. Very essence of sugar, of any sweet. So, here, Ukta means origin, that undifferentiated, universal substance or material cause from which the whole universe comes out. That is called Uktam. And all these three are called Uktams. What are these three? Nama, Rupa and Karma. The whole universe is nothing but a combination of these three. That's why I called it a triangle. In a triangle, you cannot remove one. If you remove one angle, the triangle falls down. Remove the Nama from this triangle of Nama, Rupa, Karma, world will vanish. You remove the rupa form, a world will vanish. With the destruction of one particular aspect, the whole universe will completely disappear. For example, that you see a tree. Let us say it is a mango tree. So you remove the nama. Then what happens? The tree itself will disappear because nama indicates a particular form. And when there is no nama, name and form, there would be no object also. Then what remains? Don't think. It becomes non-existent. No. It remains. It merges back into Brahman. Remove karma from this world. What remains will be, there would be no name, no form, but it is not destruction. It is merging back into its unmanifest form. Merging back into its unmanifest form, which is Brahman or Atma. So this section is telling us, wherever you experience anything, and experience will be either the gross physical or the subtle thought. Either it is you experience a thought or you experience some external object. They both must contain nama, rupa and karma. So as I said, you experience a person, and if you remove the rupa, name will automatically disappear. When form and name disappear, the action also will disappear. This person called Rama will not be available at all for experience. And these three are in subtle form, and that is what we call a thought. The moment we think Rama, the moment we see Rama, immediately the form of Rama and the name of Rama and the character of Rama, which is called action, summation of every activity is called character. Is Rama is a good person, generous person, loving person, or cruel person, destructive person. So, all that is dependent upon karma. What we call our assessment of the whole character is nothing but through the experience of karmas only. And that is how, that is called karma. Karma means character. Character means our estimate of a person. The idea, our idea about that person. And that is called karma. And it must have a specific separation. This is not Krishna. Krishna is a very good person. But this person is not so good. So every single experienceable object can be separated from the infinite number of objects in this world completely. But here is one. What is the point? That the nama means shabda, that is Brahman. The form, rupa, that is Brahman. When it is removed of its specific form, and in this sixth section, we get a peculiar name for the uktam of form, for the original cause of every form. That is called Chakshu. So sometimes when we try to read, oh, Chakshu means the eye. So eye is from where all the forms arise. No. The Chakshu which we are referring is a sense organ. Through that we are able to experience forms, but the origin of the forms is not the Chakshu. So according to this section, Chakshu means origin, uktam, the cause from which all forms arise. And all forms can arise only from a formless aspect. Please keep this in mind. From the nameless origin, any name can come out. From Shabda, any name can come out. From formlessness, any form can come out. And what is the origin or uktam of karma? Prana. Prana means energy. The sum total of energy, not individualized energy, but universal energy, that is called Ishvara, Hiranyagarbha, Saguna Brahma. These are all different names for it. So what is this whole universe? It is nothing but Shabda Brahma, Rupa Brahma, and Prana Brahma. And they are all unmanifest. Only when Brahman manifests in the form of sound, it becomes names. When Brahman manifests as forms, they all become different forms, experienceable externally and also in the form of thoughts. If you analyze your dream state, everything that you see is nothing but name, form, and action. And this prana is not called prana, it is called Brahman. Only when it manifests through a particular instrument, then it will be called prana. Otherwise, it is called pranadevata, which is another name for Brahman. And so, why is this section telling us? Because it wants to tell what is it that bounds us, this nama, rupa and karma. We see an object, for example, a person, and he has a particular form which can be distinguished from every other person, and he has a particular name to distinguish him. If there are, for example, three Ramas in the same family, then the Rama number 1, Rama number 2, Rama number 3, we have to distinguish. So the function of a name is to distinguish every form from every other form. And about everybody, through the actions, we have an idea of what this object is. Every object, not necessarily human beings. This is a good mango. This is a good dog. That is a dangerous animal, etc., etc. But if you remove nama, rupa and karma, removing means what? Merging them back into their original cause, what remains is pure Brahman. And as I mentioned earlier, Vidyaranya puts it in his Panchadashi, what is world? Sat, Chit, Ananda plus Nama plus Rupa. What is Brahman? Sat, Chit, Ananda are the world without Nama Rupa, simply Sat, Chit, Ananda, which is the origin. Uktam, that is called Brahman. So what does it want? Now the Upanishad warns us that why this particular explanation in this last section of the first chapter, we are all caught, bound. And this bondage is of two types. Our first bondage will be to the body. Everybody, my body, your body, anybody's body will have a particular form, a particular shape, a particular color, height, weight, etc. Distinguishable, totally distinguishable from everything else in this world. There will not be two equally same objects. Some difference will be there. As they say, even between a billion hairs, one can clearly distinguish one hair from the other hair. Of course, we require a very subtle instrument for that. When the snow falls, there will be billions of snowflakes. Every snowflake has its own specific signature, nama, rupa. What a marvelous creation it is. So, no two persons' eyes are alike. No two persons' thumb impressions are alike. That is how our thumb impressions are taken to distinguish it. And immigration officials, they do find out. So, everything is unique. And this whole body, our body, has a form, has a name, has certain characteristics created by our actions. And actions are possible only because of prana or energy. So these three things form the physical body as well as the sukshma sharira, subtle body. Now the Upanishad wants to distinguish this fifth section. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad has given a beautiful name for the physical body. It is called Satyam. And for the subtle body or mind, it has given another name, Amrutam, immortality. Now, we may be wondering, why the Upanishad is giving this word Satyam? Only Brahman, Satchidananda, deserves the word Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam, Brahma. Because what is our Satyam? My Satyam, your Satyam. If I think you are not Satyam, I would not be giving this talk. If you think I am not Satyam, you would not be listening to this talk. But for us, the body, the physical body, the physical world are the most, they are the only truth available at this moment. That is why it is called Satyam. And we are enormously attached to it. This attachment prevents us from going into our Uktam, original cause, and realizing. Why should we realize our Uktam, our original cause? Because our identity with this particular personality is preventing our identity with every object in this world. But if we seek for the truth, every object has got the same form, name, and prana energy. And so, these are the effects. Every effect must have a cause. So, these are the manifested effects. And a manifested effect must have an unmanifested cause. But we are caught in it. And this emphasis on separating ourselves from everything else, that is called bondage, that creates tremendous amount of suffering. How does it create? If I can identify with my brother, with my sister, with my mother, with my parent, even if I am suffering, but if they are enjoying, happy, then I will be a happy person, because identity means I cannot say I identify with you, but I don't experience your happiness, joy. No. The moment I identify, that feeling, the other person's experience must become my experience. That is why when a mother is having less amount of sweet and she gives it to her children and she is more than happy, because as a mother, and that is the meaning of the word mother, is completely identified. This is me, but I am eating through this body, through the body of my child. But the same mother will not experience it when the neighboring child is eating it. That is the funny thing. So the Upanishad wants to tell, now you practice sadhana, spiritual practice, and slowly you go back to your origin. Surprisingly, you will discover that every name is your name, every form is your form, and every karma is your karma, every object is none other than you. This is so beautifully illustrated in the Bhagavatam. Shukadeva, the son of Vedavyasa, as soon as he was born, completely naked, 16 years old, he started walking away, because he was a full knower of Brahman. His father, who was attached, he started following his son, calling him, "Oh my son, oh my son." And do you know what miracle has taken place? Shukadeva was completely unaware. Somebody was following him and calling him, because he was absorbed in his nature as Brahman. And Brahman is this world. Therefore, the whole world started responding to Shukadeva. "Yes, father. Yes, father." Every tree, every creature is telling, "Yes, father. Yes, father." What a marvelous illustration we get in these beautiful scriptures. So, O man, after all, what is it you are seeking? You are striving 24 hours a day. "I want to be happy." But you can never be happy. Maybe very little happiness for a very short time. But if you can identify yourself with another person, with two people, with 100 people, with 1,000 people, with everybody. So, when a tiger succeeds in hunting a deer and then starts enjoying that food and quenching its hunger, there is a peculiar ananda, just like us. And that ananda will be yours, because you are identifying with the tiger. Anybody who is happy, you will be happy. And where there is happiness, there is no place for unhappiness. Because these two opposite thoughts cannot stay in the mind at the same time. So a person who identifies with the whole universe will be the happiest person in this world. And that is one way of understanding when the Divine Mother showed to Sri Ramakrishna, "Why are you not eating through all these mouths?" So that is the message, that you are very unconscious striving to break this bondage called identity with your individuality and becoming the real you, who is the universal. But you are not able to understand it. So this hint that to try to find out, every name has the same origin. Like 10 separate people are the children of one particular couple. Just as a small illustration. Then all of them feel identity. We are brothers and sisters. If some harm, some suffering comes to one of us, it is like all of us suffering. So that is called true family. So this is the idea, that first of all, you trace your identity, the cause from which you have come, which is called Uptam in this case. So another important point we have to remember. You cannot separately, independently merge name into Shabda, form into formlessness, and action into Prana or Ishvara or Hiranyagarbha or Suvarna Brahma. Either all the three will merge or all the three will be separated, because they are one and the same. Just a small example. Suppose there is a small mango fruit and it is full of flesh, very ripe and very fragrant. So as soon as it is thrown out, then everything will disappear. The flavor, the fragrance, the sweetness, that soft texture, everything will disappear. So we are one in three, three in one. That is the lesson this sixth section want to tell us. So this is the message of the sixth section. With this we have completed the sixth section. What is the tatparya, essence, the summary of this one? The summary is that we are all one in Brahman. What makes us think we are separate is a form, name and action. If we can succeed in merging them, then there is nothing that is there. Take the example of a clay. So supposing 100 pots are made out of clay, and all the 100 pots have to be given 100 separate names. This is a glass, this is a plate, this is for cooking pot, this is a storage pot, etc., etc. But when we go into the origin, remember, all the three will be there. What is the karma, prana of this cooking pot? Cooking. What is the karma of the glass pot? It fulfills the function of drinking. So what is the function of the plate? That is for keeping food so that we can eat according to our own mix-up. So the name, plate, glass, pot, storage pot, they are different. Their forms are different. Their functions are different. Names, nama, forms, rupa, functions, karma, all are different. But if you merge them back, all the three, if you merge the cooking pot, then it becomes clay. As soon as it becomes clay, it loses its particular form, name, function. Apply the same thing to the glass pot, the plate pot, the storage pot, any number of blessed pots. You see, that is how it works. You take another example, golden ornaments. Make any number of ornaments. The names are different. The functions are different. This golden ornament is called earring, meant only to be hung in the ear. This is called nose ring. It is meant to be hung through the nose. This is a bangle. It's meant to be kept on the arm. So, this is how the functions will be there. Each function, separate form, separate name, then You melt one, nama, rupa, and karma disappear. That is how we have to understand what is the way for us to achieve identity with the universe by removing the attachment to this nama rupa. That is called vairagyam. Vairagyam means dispassion. What is the dispassion here? Not giving up necessarily, but removing the attachment. So, that is called naham deham. I am not the body. The moment you say the form of the body, the name of the body, the function of the body, everything associated with the body, it ceases to affect that particular mind. So the Upanishad, as I mentioned earlier, calls this body consisting of particular formation, particular name, particular function, calls it Satyam. Satyam means we should not take it in the ultimate sense. Satyam means here that our Satyam, our perception, this is the only truth, this is the only truth, this is the truth. But the scripture knows this is not the truth, because that which perishes, that which changes, that which is dependent, that is not truth. What is independent, what is not dependent upon anything, and what can never either grow or become less, that is called Satyam. Trikala abadhitam Satyam. So, the form is changing, and according to the form, what do you think? The name also is changing. This is a child, this is a youth, this is a middle class person, middle aged person, middle class person also. This is an old person, and this is a dead person. With every change, the name also changes. The function also changes. Prana also varies. So we suffer from these limitations. How to get out? At least the first stage is that I am not the body. Then to say I am not the body, to say I am not the Annamaya Kosha, I will have to identify with Pranamaya Kosha, next subtler form, the cause of Annam, which is called Pranamaya Kosha. Only then I will say this is Anatma. Anatma means Asatya. That is not the truth. That means I am not attached to it. That means it doesn't affect us. So, we have seen this one in the Taittiriya Upanishad, how Bhrigu had overcome, gradually identify with the subtler cause, from the effect to the cause, and that becomes the effect in its turn, find out its cause. The cause of the prana is mind, the cause of the mind is intellect, the cause of the intellect is the ananda, and the cause of the ananda is Brahman. So, the Upanishad is funnily telling us, the mind is called Amrita, immortal. Why? Immortality means, we use this word, the gods always want to drink the nectar of immortality. But the scripture knows very well what it is talking about. So it is relative immortality. That means for a long time, you are not going to die. You are going to enjoy. So, the duration of the body is very little. Every day we are changing. But the duration of the mind is longer. Therefore, if somebody can succeed in identifying oneself with the mind, relatively, the person can achieve immortality. That is what this section wants to convey. Detach yourself. When you realize, I thought this is Satyam. Now I realize, how can that which is changing every millisecond, it cannot be Satyam. But I want Satyam. So seek it in at a higher level, subtler level. That is called the mind. And of course, here by mind means until the Anandamaya Kosha. All the other four koshas are included. But this is this immortality of this four koshas called the mind here. Antarindriya. That loss, you know how long? It only gets destroyed when we get liberation. Until that time, it is not going to happen. So that is what this sixth section wants us to convey. Slowly, gradually, ascend. That is what Saint John of the Cross had explained it beautifully in the form of a very small poem, The Dark Night of the Soul. Until that time, the soul thought, I am in full light. Until what time? That the person was totally identified with the body. He doesn't have any faith in God. For him, the world. And what is the world? This body is the world. This is a marvelous point. Oh, there is a world outside. And how did you know there is a world outside? Only through this body. So, for example, the world consists of five elements. That is, sounds, forms, colors, sounds, colors, fragrances, tastes, and touches. Through five sense organs, we are experiencing this five. Remember always, the world means only five, as Swami Premeshanti tells, five dishes for us to enjoy. Suppose somebody is blind. The world now becomes only consisting of four things, because the world of colors, forms, totally disappeared. Suppose this person is deaf. His world consists of only three-fifths, three only. Supposing that person loses taste, only two-fifths. Suppose this person loses the ability to smell, four-fifths gone. Suppose this person cannot even experience touch. Touch means soft, hard, cold, heat. Only four. Then, where is the world? External world. Nothing. A person's world, so-called world, is totally dead. And just imagine that when a person is born blind or born deaf, he will never be able to understand. Of course, this is the Western view. Eastern view, Hindu view is, no, in the past lives he was not like that. He had all his five sense organs fully functioning. Therefore, the impressions are remaining in the mind. And therefore, he can dream. I am seeing, I am hearing, I am tasting, smelling, touching, etc. Is an entirely different subject matter. I am not going, but what I am trying to tell, that this body is the instrument through which we guess, assume, infer there is an external world. Minus this body, there is no external world at all. What a marvelous truth it is, psychological truth. So that is why our whole world is nothing but our body. and that is the greatest bondage. What is the way? Let us identify not with only this particular body, but with every body. But before we could do that, we must acquire, go back to the origin, and then identify with the origin of these three. Shabda, then formlessness, arupa, and prana, or Hiranyagarbha, or Ishvara. Identify with that. Because Ishvara represents the origin of these three. Once I identify, then I can enjoy every form, every name, and every activity. Then it becomes a leela. Leela means what? Because if two people are fighting and one kills the other, there cannot be any killing. Even from the ordinary point of view, which David Attenborough explained so beautifully, death is not permanent non-existence. Death is only going back to the elements, five elements. A body is made up of five elements, and it is only the death of the body, but the other four koshas, all of them is called sukshma sharira, including of course karana sharira. They're all go in search of a new body. Very soon it will get a new body. And so all the five koshas become complete, because without interacting with the world, our experience will not be complete. And without the world, we cannot be bound, we cannot be released. So the world is an absolute necessity for our growth. Every experience that we get in this world is to be learned. What lesson? So I loved this person betrayed. So what is the lesson we have to learn? That person has not betrayed. You were expecting that person to be grateful and recompense, pay back. It is your fault. You are free to love. You are not free to expect. So, learn the lesson. Don't stop loving, because if you stop loving, you stop being happy. Love and happiness, joy, are one and the same thing actually. If you say I am happy, that is called love. If you say I love, that means you are happy. Try to understand this very clearly. And we cannot live without happiness. So, we have the right to love. Can we be joyful without the other person responding? In fact, we can be more happy. Because if I love something, then that gives us the greatest happiness. The greater our love, proportionately greater would be our happiness. You all know that. You are very intelligent students. But still, I would like to give an illustration. Supposing you like to read mystery novels, very common example, and there is your favorite author, and you just love whatever that person writes is a page turner. You just love that person's writings. And it comes to you in the form of a book. Does the book return your, it will tell, oh, I also love you. No, you love, you use the book, you read the book never responds because it is lifeless. But if your love for that type of book is 10%, your happiness is 10%. If you love it 50%, your love for that book will be 50%. Your joy will be 50%. If you love 100%, then you would like to read it again and again. Your joy will be 100%. So, love is equivalent to joy. What are we talking about? That our problem comes, especially with other living human beings, that my love is not requited, not returned. That is our mistake. You have a right only to love. You have no right to expect anything. And you know, the moment we stop expecting, how much of joy will come? All the joy that we are likely to derive. For example, you love a person, you meet the person, you talk with that person, and that person also starts showing love for you. And the person's talk, person's smile, personality of that person, it enhances your happiness, joy. That's what you think. But because sometimes if he doesn't express or if he reduces that expression, you are upset. So you set up this meeting and the resultant will be you are upset. But just imagine, I love this person, but I will not expect anything from that person. Whether that person gives it back, shows love, or doesn't show love, it doesn't really matter because you are your master. If your love is dependent upon that person's reaction, then your love goes up and down, changes all the time. But if it is completely independent, I don't care, but I just love. There is a beautiful quotation from, I think, Swami Vivekananda. He quotes from Mahabharata. Or it is not there actually in Mahabharata, but it is a wise saying, let us say. Once Yudhishthira was absorbed in looking at the beautiful sunrise and sunset. Somebody wanted to speak with him. He went there, but Yudhishthira was so completely absorbed, he was not aware of it. After some time, this person found that Yudhishthira was coming back to consciousness, so he asked him, "Sir, what do you get? I see that you are completely absorbed in it. What profit, what labha do you get out of it?" And Yudhishthira was shocked, surprised, said, "Labha? Profit? I'm not expecting. I love, I enjoy seeing the sunrise, the sunset, any beautiful thing. That is it. It gives me the greatest joy. If I expect something, it will definitely break at some point of time." Ramakrishna, at the age of 7 or 8, he was walking in the fields. It was rainy season. The whole sky was covered up with black, thick clouds. And there was a flock of swan gracefully flying across. And that sight had made him so joyous, so absorbed, he fell down, unconscious. He was unconscious to the world, conscious to the aesthetic beauty of that experience. That's why when people were frightened, he said, "No, my health is perfectly all right. In fact, an unhealthy person cannot experience this. Only a perfectly healthy person can experience it." So what are we talking about? That you go to the origin. Two things happen. Then you identify yourself with the entire creation. Second thing is, whatever is happening in this universe, everything will be joyful. Somebody is quarreling with somebody or with you, that is a joy. It's like a drama, because it is unreal. Somebody is killing somebody, it's an extreme philosophy, hard to understand, digest. Somebody is killing somebody, and that person is enjoying it. Just as a illustration, Sri Ramakrishna saw Akshay passed away in front of his eyes. Everybody was weeping their eyes out. Sri Ramakrishna was laughing because he saw what is the satyam? Death is unreal. It is only the body, but nothing happened to the soul. The scabbard has been separated from the soul. Whether something happens to the scabbard or not, it doesn't really matter. So, develop that vairagya. What is vairagya? Giving up attachment to one individuality and identifying oneself with everything else. That is called true vairagya. And that is the essence of this one. So, man, every experience in this world has something to teach you. Learn it well. Keep it in mind, reinforce it, try identify with everybody else, and that is called Sarvatra Sama Darshanaha. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagat Gurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Mohor Mohoho. May Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna. Okay.
Maharaj, in yesterday's class, you mentioned one point about creation.
Yeah.
We love what we create. Both good and bad characters equally.
Yeah.
So when Holy Mother says, I am the mother of the good as well as the wicked.
Yeah.
It's because she created everyone.
Yes, the creator is a joyful being or unhappy, insufferable being.
Joyful.
Because whatever you create, for example, as a child you drew the picture of a tree. Whether it is a tree or a piece of grass, we don't understand. You see, there was a school.
Mm-hmm.
There was a drawing class. One day the drawing teacher wanted to test his pupils. So he asked that take up a piece of paper and draw whatever you like.
Mm.
And he was going from student to student and trying to figure out what they are, small children.
Mm.
So he was going to one small girl,
mm.
trying to figure out what is it that she was trying to draw. He couldn't make head or tail.
Mm.
So he asked, child, what are you trying to draw?
Mm.
She said, I am trying to draw God.
Mm.
He asked, do you know what God looks like? She said, no. When I complete my drawing, I will know what he looks like. See, the whole, really speaking, this is the truth. Everything is the creation. The whole world, from one point of view, we say God created. You know, Advaita Vedanta never accepts this. God only created the five elements. And it is the Jiva who created the entire universe Hari himself. Very meaningful, highly debatable, and at the same time, absolute truth. So if you are living, for example, under this particular government, who created that government? Who elected them?
Me only.
Yes, as a citizen, yes. Citizens created, more than 50% have voted for that government.
Yes.
So, who created? I create, each one of us create. So we get back, enjoy now what you created.
Yeah.
That is called spirituality. This is the truth. The whole world is created. Swargaloka is created. When you go to Swargaloka, you don't say, I created Swargaloka, it already exists. I am only going there. That is your language. But actually, who created that Swargaloka?
I only created my thoughts.
Yes, absolutely. Think over it. Meditate upon it. You created it. So you are the creator of joy, you are the creator of unhappiness, everything. Advaita Vedanta never accepts God created this world. That is why they don't want to answer. Did God create? No. Then how is this world? Oh, it is not that. It is co-equal with God. Anadi. Beginningless. Avidya, beginningless. Creation, beginningless. Suffering,
beginningless.
Yeah. So, we created the entire world. Just now I pointed out, you have to connect these two ideas. He said the whole external world is nothing but experienced through our and how do you experience it? Pure happiness, pure unhappiness. Each one of us experience it in a peculiar way, isn't it?
Yes, Maharaj.
That is called creation. That is called drishti srishti vada. Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Pranam, Swamiji, Guruji Maharaji, pranam.
Okay.
What a absolutely beautiful, lovable talk. And these the key elements which you have, there are quite a few actually today which explain is like right to love alone, but not to expect. And is it right to understand that Vairagya is really the key to the way of really pure love, which is not bound by anything?
You see,
conditioned by anything.
People have got many, many misconceptions about Vairagya.
Uh-huh.
Vairagya means give up.
Yes.
The thing is, you cannot give up the land on which you are standing until you get to a firmer ground for you to occupy and stand up.
True, very true.
So what is it we want to give up? We always want to give up what is less satisfying to what is more satisfying. Is it not?
Yes.
Nobody says, I want to give up what is less satisfying without expecting higher satisfaction.
Yes.
But you know what is the psychology? The moment I give up dukkha, automatically, is it not a state of joy?
Yes.
So, think of it. Giving up means yes, giving up the lesser value for a higher value.
For a higher value. And if we don't want to get upset, we need to change the setup, isn't it?
Correct.
So, yeah, that also you said. Maharaji, this is a very silly, silly question, but can I ask, like, if I enjoy, for example, deeply moving real human stories as movies, is that okay? Because it allows me to see how, where I am attached or not attached. Is that okay? Or
first, to let me recollect a small joke. There was a tramp, a beggar, in front of a huge, magnificent hotel.
Right.
He did not eat for 3 days. He was waiting for some compassionate soul to look at him and then give him something so that he could eat. Suddenly the doors of the, inner doors of the hotel opened and a gorgeous lady covered with diamonds and mink coat came out. One look at, oh, I cannot bear to look at the sight of these miserable creatures. Ran to her Rolls Royce, jumped into it and disappeared. If that is the kind of watching that we want to do, then it is not desirable. You demonstrate in your life that you are translating your sympathy into concrete help.
Yes.
Then it is okay. But even this dependency upon too many moving stories, that is also a kind of slavery.
Achcha.
So, we want to feel sad. So we don't find any excuse to be sad. Then we seek to this kind of movies, hoping against hope that they will move us. What is a movie? Whatever moves you is called a movie.
Movie, yeah, I realized it, why it is called movie.
So, you have to be discriminative enough to say, am I watching just simply to give vent to my emotion and get satisfaction thereby, or does it really inspire me to do something concrete as a service to God?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, Maharaji. Jai Thakur.
Jai Thakur.
No other questions, Maharaji.
Okay. Jai Thakur.